Brett Curlin, welcome you to the inaugural Lake the Post podcast of what we hope will be many, and there's obviously lots to talk about in Northwestern Wildcat sports, and Wildcat basketball. I'm joined by the rest of the Lake the Post team, joined by we got Philip Rossman Reich and Mr. LTP himself. Gentlemen, wow, we're at a pretty good, pretty crazy point right now. You know, pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. Here I'm out here in Arizona, and you know that's in the news. And I got to tell you, often by this time we've kind of moved on from Northwestern basketball, and yet here we are still talking NU hoops. 16-10, 6-8, four regular season games to go. Tuesday night, home game against Michigan. I mean, it's biggest home game. Gentlemen, where do we start? I mean, it's going to be rocking in Welsh Ryan Arena. Where do we start? What biggest game since? Anyone, guys?
Yeah, I'll jump in. LTP here, I think. I wrote about this, so cat out of the bag. The first thing that came to mind with Michigan coming to town was that Michigan 94 game, which, you know, I think we all are biased to our undergraduate experience, and that was definitely, along with a half-court buzzer beater against Illinois my freshman year, the highlight. But beating Juwan Howard and Jalen Rose at Welsh Ryan in a win, it was a elimination game. Win, go to the NIT, lose, go home, and we beat the number three team in the country, who all they had to do is beat us for the Big Ten title, and that was insane. But really, in big picture, it doesn't really hold a candle to tomorrow night's game, I think. I don't know, Phil, what about you from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have a deeper understanding of Northwestern history than I do, just because I'm more of a recent graduate. I honestly cannot remember a home game that had this much weight behind it, and I'm someone that was at Northwestern for two of those NIT runs. The tournament has been the dream for this team for a long time, and they've just been at the door waiting to go in. And you know, for the longest time, it seemed like they were leaving it in other teams' hands. And you know, with these four games left, it feels like Northwestern has its tournament hopes right there for them to go get. And that's honestly the position you want to be in. I mean, it's obviously not perfect. Some things still have to break their way, but you know, they're right there. They can really do this. And it's good to feel nervous about games this late in February. When it comes to Northwestern basketball.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, as you know, as before we started talking, I was looking back over, you know, the old schedules, and yeah, I mean, I think my brain gravitates to that 94 game against Michigan, because that was actually my senior year in high school after I'd been accepted to Northwestern, when I just started, so it got starting to really follow Northwestern basketball. But I mean, I frankly was in Northwestern probably during the darkest time in Northwestern hoops, at least in the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, I was bracketed by that NIT appearance in 94 and then the NIT appearance in 99, the year after I graduated. I was there, during the point shaving scandal, Northwestern regular out and lose by 30 or 40. So I certainly can't remember any from my 4 years there. There were some games over the last couple of years where it seemed like we might be turning that corner. We talked a bit before this about the game at Ohio State a couple of years back that would have put Northwestern at 500 in the Big Ten in the last game of the season. But otherwise, I mean, this one's huge. And like you said, Philip, it's hard to believe. You know that it's good to be nervous this late in February, and a lot of this comes off of as a result of the game against Minnesota with starting with John Cherna, taking over now as the top point scorer in Northwestern basketball history. Let's reflect on that for a minute. Pretty amazing accomplishment
I didn't think he was gonna get it, to be honest with you. When it was 16 minutes, he hadn't scored in the game, and I mean, I'm prone to hyperbole, but you go back into probably what top five all-time plays in Northwestern history, that steal and dunk has to go down. The one that put him on the board with the 2 points with about 4 minutes to go in the game has to be one of the more memorable plot points on the timeline. I mean, he just took over, right? He scored 10 consecutive points. It was just, holy smokes, he felt so glad for the guy, and the place was just rocking, and everyone was willing him to get there. And once he had that first half flourish, there was no doubt in my mind that A, we're going to win, and B, that he was going to get it. So just thrilled that we could do it in a win.
It definitely would have been a little less special. Like even John said, it would have been less special if we hadn't come out on the winning side of that game. We did it. That steal really changed momentum. Like you said, we were, you know, it was a close game at that point, and then John Scherner went on that run, and the game was never really close again. Like, Minnesota made a few runs, and then it seemed like every time they get it back to within 8 or, you know, 7 or 6, Scherner would be there to hit a big three. I mean, I really didn't view his being scoreless to that point as a negative, just because Northwestern was still in the game. It seemed to me like he was just doing what his team needed from him, and they needed him to be a defender at that point. And then with the game kind of balancing on the end, you know, guys like Dejan and Drew Crawford being able to carry the team much further, he turned it on offensively and went after it. And that was just impressive. That was as impressive to me as anything.
Yeah, I mean, that play, that steal with about 4 minutes to go, I mean, I was starting to get really nervous watching the game. Scherner hadn't scored. Minnesota felt like they were chipping away, particularly that, you know, their zone was really starting to hold the Cats at bay. And then Scherner just cut in and made that steal. And it's essentially like, you know, what you said, Jay, about that being one of the, you know, biggest plays in Northwestern basketball history. I mean, who knows if he doesn't make that steal to, you know, and then kind of, you know, get the building going. And I mean, I was getting really worried they were going to lose that basketball game. And let's talk for a second. The fact that John Scherner is now the, you know, leading scorer in Northwestern basketball history, and it's pretty impressive. I mean, this has been talked about a lot, but he's not, certainly not a guy you look at and go, "Huh, that guy is going to be the leading scorer of a, you know, a Division I college basketball team." I mean, he's doesn't exactly have the typical basketball build, and although he's definitely put on weight over the years, and even his shot is not necessarily the prettiest shooting form, but he just makes it happen.
Yeah, just you said it right. I mean, for those of us who, you know, Brett, I don't know if you get BTN, but for those of us who get the BTN, it's like, I say this on the blog all the time, it's like, cue the tape. Every game you're going to hear a commentator talk about his look and how he's not taken seriously. But in some ways, isn't it just totally apropos that this is the guy who ends up getting the all-time scoring streak? You know, I'm just, it's pretty fun to see a guy who just, he's so selfless. He does everything the right way, it seems. I mean, I don't know him personally, but just from those that are close to him, just so selfless. And, you know, I think the thing that's really remarkable is that it's a guy you look at and you're like, he could have been there a year ago. He's so unselfish. And I think it's one of his faults. I think he at times could be too unselfish. You can see his teammates kind of like, come on, John, take over the game, you know? And I think that I look back at his junior year, which kind of got buried a little bit this year. I mean, how injured he was. That Mount St. Mary's game, he hurt his ankle. And then, you know, I mean, he was getting 6 points, 8 points. So he was playing on anyone who's ever had a high ankle sprain. Oh, my God. I mean, you can't even walk. The guy was walking to and from the games with an air cast. And, you know, so he probably would have blown this away had he been healthy last year. But it just kind of speaks to the guy he is and how selfless he is.
That's a really good point about his junior year last year. As good as Sobolewski has been, and he's been fantastic, and I'm excited to see the rest of his career unfold. Just imagine him being 100% with, you know, Deuce Thompson, a guy who could help, you know, share that burden consistently the way he did at the end of last season, and Andrew Crawford there too, who's been a great scorer all year long too. But yeah, as to the point about Scherner needing to take control, he's such a team guy that, yeah, he's a little reluctant to take the team on his shoulders. But it's becoming pretty clear that, he feels the burden to get this team over the top and into the tournament. And, you know, I pulled up some of his numbers, and it's just amazing to see a guy who's this high volume of a scorer just be this deadly efficient. I mean, you talk about his weird shot. We talk about how he doesn't look like a basketball player, but he's just blowing everybody in the Big Ten away. And, you know, I don't know if he's probably not in line to be Big Ten Player of the Year, but he's certainly in line to be a first team All Big Ten guy, you know, shooting, you know, 48.4% from the floor and averaging, you know, 20 points a game, you know, tops in the Big Ten.
You know, you bring up a good point, you know, as it relates to accolades. I know that players and coaches could care less. They just want the wins, but that's what we live for as fans. But, I mean, how is John Cernan not in the national conversation about National Player of the Year? I mean, he's leading scorer in the best conference by far. And, you know, honestly, if we were to make it, which is obviously still a big if, I mean, that's not just a story of the year in college basketball. You know, add plural to that. And so I don't see his name on any of the lists as, like, legitimate players of the year. And how can he not be at the top of the conversation? You know, Draymond is great for Michigan State, but how is Cernan not a leading contender for player of the year? If you look at it from, you take a guy off a team, and how will the team be? You take Cernan off of this team, we're looking at a goose egg in the win column.
Yeah, except for a few of those games when Crawford took over, but you could argue Crawford doesn't take over if Cernan's not there to get the defensive attention. I mean,
go ahead.
I think part of the problem with, as far as National Player of the Year goes, is that a lot of it is dictated by perception. It's dictated by, is this guy going to go to the next level in the NBA and play? Is this guy, you know, putting up, you know, unseemly numbers, you know, for a team that is possibly contending for the national championship or contending, you know, for a tournament spot? I mean, if Cernan had a big game against Creighton and Northwestern had beaten Creighton, used to say that Cernan wouldn't be this year's Doug McDermott. But I mean, Cernan, you know, for better or for worse, just doesn't look like a basketball player to a lot of people. And so they, you know, gravitate to the guys that are on TV a lot, like, you know, Tyshawn Taylor of Kansas, and or not Tyshawn Taylor of Kansas, their other guy. Their guy, and Anthony Davis of Kentucky, who I think everyone believes is going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Those guys are always front and center and in the national championship, you know, conversation. And so it's, you know, Cernan gets a little bit forgotten there, and he shouldn't, because he has done some amazing things this year and has been incredibly important and valuable to this Northwestern team.
So given all that, and given what John's done, there's fact of the matter, there's 4 games left now. You know, we're Northwestern 6-8 in the Big Ten. You know, 4 games left, starting Tuesday night. We got game host home at Michigan, and then we got at Penn State, home against Ohio State, and then at Iowa. What do we think, fellas? You know, how do we think this is going to play out?
Who's got the dice? Right? this is the way I think in my narcissistic approach to Northwestern athletics, and that is, I have no clue what's going to happen. I just know, I have in my gut, that it's going to come down to at Iowa, just because of the recent unfriendly rivalry among the fan base, and I can just see us having to win at Iowa. I don't know how we get there, but, you know, we'll see. Tomorrow night, to me, the game at Purdue is really the one I look back at, and it's easy to go into what-if mode. Yeah, we're in position in that one. What I don't want to happen is we get right down to the cut line, and it's against us and Purdue. That's my big fear. So as much as I'm rooting for Northwestern, I'm doing a little bit of rooting against the Boilermakers. They had a pretty favorable schedule to get the 9-9. But, you know, really, it's cliche. Every coach and player says it. But as a fan, it's for the first time, I can't even look at it. I'm so obsessed with tomorrow night's game. I'm nauseous already, you know, on Monday that
depending on what happens tomorrow, make it interesting. But we don't. I don't want to be in it. I still firmly believe, I know that the tournament committee will say it only conference records. Those are human beings on the committee. They're sitting there. They know the story. If we are at 9-9, we're in. I don't care what anyone says. I'm convinced if we go 9-9, we're in seventh place. Worst case scenario, possibly, could possibly be sixth place. We're in. And so it'll be fun to see how we get there. Knowing Northwestern, you know, we could beat Ohio State and lose to Penn State. That's kind of the way it goes with us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put a number to the last four games at all, just because I know how Northwestern goes. Just giving hope to kind of rip it away at some point. You know, the last few years, I've kind of been joking around about this, but I'm getting very careful that it's true. Penn State, Bryce Dorton Center, and Iowa City, Carver Hawkeye Arena are where Western's tournament hopes have gone to die the last few years. It seems like losses at those two buildings, you know, are the death knell almost. Because I mean, not that they're bad teams, but Penn State's been in and out of the tournament during this whole NIT run that Northwestern's been on, and Penn State and Iowa has, you know, been very down. But every time we seem to go to those places, this team just can't come out with a win. Like, I even remember when I was covering the team back in 2008. They had the loss at Iowa where they were up by 12 and half. They ended up, you know, winning only one Big Ten game that year. And you could just kind of, I remember being in the post-game press conference, and you could just kind of feel how hopeless things seemed after that game with that team specifically. That was Juice Thompson's freshman year. Ironically, beat Michigan for the early Big Ten win that year. So, you know, maybe there's some divinations in that. But I really believe that as far as the final four games, that they have to win those two road games. They can't afford a bad loss at this stage, because they've done such a good job avoiding them all year. They can't have let them. And so I'm not looking past Michigan. It's a humongous game tomorrow. But I get the feeling, like you, Jay, that it's going to come down to the state in Iowa and getting those wins that you're supposed to get. And that's something that this Northwestern team hasn't always been able to do.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree. I mean, I was just looking back over the schedule as you said that, because, I can't tell how many times, you know, oh, we're going to Penn State, that's a win. Nope. I mean, and looking back, we're talking, I mean, horrible losses. I mean, looking back, you know, last year at Penn State, 65-41 loss. The year before, 79-60 loss. You know, the year before that, 67-51 loss. I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling. You know, and I'm inclined to agree. I mean, I feel like it is going to come down to that game at Carver Hawkeye Arena, because also, I mean, you look, it's, you know, home to Michigan, home to Ohio State. And as geeked as I am for the game against Michigan, I'm nervous doesn't even begin, particularly after, you know, their win over Ohio State over the weekend. And then, you know, hosting Ohio State, again, you know, Northwestern, it's amazing. Northwestern tends to play, I mean, people always talk about home court advantage, but it is astounding that, you know, when teams come in to Welsh Ryan Arena, you know, that crowd really gets things kicking. I mean, obviously highlighted this year by, you know, the win over Michigan State, but things do, the crowd really does a great job of, you know, the energy in there of leveling things out. But, you know, I guess it's, you know, being a Northwestern basketball fan has begat a lot of pessimists as a result. So it's, you know, you'd love to look at this and go, okay, you know, I mean, if you were, you know, following the chalk, as they say, okay, winning it, you know, losses at home against Michigan, Ohio State, wins at Penn State and Iowa. Okay, then, you know, what do we do with that? Okay, well, then that's, you know, that you know, would put us at 8-10, so you got to find another win there. But who knows, you know? So, it's kind of nerve-wracking.
Hey, Brett, I got to jump in here. I mean, can we talk about the fun part for a second here? I got the NCAA 2012 tournament venues up on my screen right now. And I was telling my wife last night about March. I'm on vacation the week of the final game, and I'm actually in another country. So I'm going to be back in the country on March 10th, and Selection Sunday is March 11th. And I've already started telling her that we're going to either Albuquerque, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Portland, Columbus, Greensboro, Nashville, or Omaha. And I got to jump in. I mean, big picture, from a Rose Bowl perspective, I was fortunate enough. That was the year after I graduated. I was fortunate enough to go, and I'm self-aware enough to know nothing will top that athletically, short of winning a national championship, and even that would probably come second to that experience because it was so, like you talked about with Stuart Mandel, was so out of the blue. This is probably number two. Going to the dance, can you imagine being in Louisville, Kentucky for the first round game? There's going to be 20,000 people in purple trying to get 4,000 seats. It would be the highest demanded first round ticket possibly ever, because I'm pretty convinced, I know every one of my friends is going, and I don't know about your peer sets, but I mean, it's going to be a purple party if this were ever to happen of epic proportions.
Well, I'll take it one step further, show you how crazy I am. I'm already like, ooh, hopefully they make the tournament. They make the West Regional. They go on a run, and then the West Regional is here. I'm in Phoenix. It's here in Phoenix. I'm like, oh, and I could see the Cats in the Sweet 16. And then I stop myself. Do you realize how ridiculous that's? The fact that I'm even having that conversation with myself is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think about, because it's the same way. I mean, I've had conversations with friends over the last few years, you know, when it's, I mean, the dream has not gone on this long in previous seasons, but, you know, that if they make tournament, we're there. You know, we're going, you know, no question about it. And, I mean, and
to
it
that
does,
point, I got to
go ahead, Jay.
I got a question for you then on that. Does Dayton count in your mind? Because my most cynical Northwestern buddies have said, is there any doubt we're going to be playing in the first four on March 13th and 14th, the play-in game? We're not going to make it in on our own. We're going to get the play-in game. So if we were to make it to Dayton, does that count in your mind?
I mean, that would be so, as goofy as this is going to sound, so perfectly Northwestern.
So I was going to say the exact same thing.
You know, it's like we kind of made it, but and then you know that gets to a larger question. We can talk about this a bit more later. Then does that qualify as making the term? Does that check that box? And then, you know, because there's obviously been all this conversation about, you know, Coach Carmody and if they make tournament, if they don't make tournament, you know, what happens? And then if that is it, if they are, because, you know, and right now Lenardi's got them as one of the last four teams in, and, you know, and that. What that now is, that those Dayton games tend to be those, you know, kind of those some of those last teams in. And so then does that mean, okay, you know, if they finally made the tournament, you know, I mean, what do you guys think? I'm not sure I count that, you know, for me. And maybe it's because, you know, I've spent every Thursday, and this is goes to my professional background and even personally too, of, you know, every Thursday, that Froese Grand Insular Tournament is a vacation day for me, and I sit back and, you know, watch games all day. That's when the tournament starts to me. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
I'm a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not accusing anyone of impropriety here, but how could Turner/CBS not love to have Northwestern in that first four? You know, the play-in game for the drama surrounding their first chance to ever get in the tournament, and they have to play their way in. That's what scares me, that if that opportunity is there, that's going to happen. Now, I know the committee picks and yada yada yada, but as a quasi fatalist, I think we're going to end up at Dayton. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I can just speak to how I feel. I wouldn't be as excited to be going to Dayton than I would be to Louisville, for instance, especially without the guarantee of that next game and planning that weekend. Yeah, I mean, officially they'll say we went to the tournament, because even if you make, even before they did the first four, you know, you get to be one of the 65, you know, you're officially quote unquote in the tournament. But even if they don't pull up that graphic every time we're on ESPN anymore, which I imagine is just called the Northwestern graphic, the Northwestern basketball graphic, because I guess there's one for football too now. But it would always be tainted, I feel, a little bit by the asterisk. Well, they lost in the first four. They didn't make it to the field of 64. So if they end up going to Dayton and they win, everything indicated we can even say we won an NCAA tournament game. And won it out on NCAA tournament games entering the quote-unquote second round. But at the same time, I don't know if they would cheapen it, but it wouldn't be the same. It'd be like our first bowl in winning being the Motor City Bowl. I mean, yeah, right. It's a bowl in, but it's the Motor City Bowl. No, it's the Motor City Bowl. We love you guys.
Right.
For me, I think while getting the tournament would be awesome, I'm greedy. I want to win at least one. I want to experience, the Thursday through Saturday or Friday through Sunday and coming back, because I've been to the Big Ten tournament almost every year, which is awesome. I highly recommend it. And Northwestern has by far the worst representation of fans there. No one goes. And so I'm pretty confident Coach Kermit can hear me when I yell in the crowd, because I'm like one of six people in the world. But this year we need the support. But that when your team wins and you're coming back, other people may not have. You walk around, you're in Northwestern, you feel good. You're walking down the street, you see the Minnesota people, and they lost, and you feel better. It's just how it is. And so, to have that experience and to be with all the Northwestern folks for a couple of days would just be real. And personally, I'm hoping for Omaha, just because for whatever reason, with Nebraska this year seemed to be pretty good. So let's keep on going.
We did lose there earlier this year in basketball for the record.
We did. But I think Nebraska's the host there. I'm not sure. It's not.
And not to mention, Jay, and again, not to sound greedy like I was saying before, but you win that first round game, and then there's the can they make the Sweet 16 conversation, which becomes a wholly different. A wholly different level. Just enjoy, those 2 days of just pure bliss is amazing.
And not to get too far ahead, you also have 1 day to prepare for Princeton, which you think would be in Northwestern's favor.
Right, and for what it's worth, Mr. Bracketology himself, Joe Lenardi, has us exactly that in one of the Dayton games, playing Miami. We'll take that for what it's worth.
Well, there's no doubt. Whenever you watch the tournament, that's where there's always coincidences, right? Because there's basketball connectivity. But I'm always amazed. Doesn't it seem a little conspiracy theorist? Like, is there any doubt? I've seen some of Lenardi's brackets. Is there any doubt that we'd be facing in the same bracket as Tommy Anker and Harvard? No. I mean, you can just see the storyline. Oh, it's just those are the things that'll drive you crazy, because it's like you guys are setting this up for a storyline. No way, but we'll see.
It is fun to speculate. I mean, we have to get through tomorrow first, though. But I mean, it's exciting right now.
I mean,
no doubt about it.
Now let's talk about this game against Michigan. We've kind of talked around it a bit, and the excitement of the atmosphere there and such. But let's talk about what do we think is going to happen? Let's talk about the matchups and such. I mean, we came pretty darn close to stealing one in their building back in January. And how do we think this one's going to play out on the floor?
Yeah, you guys have to check me on this. I read today that they've only won three true road games, which I'm unaware of. Michigan, that is. And so it was interesting. I thought we matched up on paper terribly against Michigan. Shows you what I know and why I'm not, coaching or anything like that, because I think I love Sobolewski. I mean, how incredible that kid has been. I think from Michigan to challenging for Sobo in a matchup scenario, he's super quick and presents all kinds of problems. He's able to penetrate. I think the thing with Michigan is they are streaky. They can score in bunches, and Hardaway Jr., he's kind of like Sherman, where he's going, he can get score 3-4 straight times up the floor. But, I think it sounds shit, but at the end of the day, we got to box out against these guys. They get so many second chance opportunities, and that's what they did down at Chrysler. And the fact that we're tied and couldn't score in the last, 3 or 4 minutes with so many opportunities, I think I didn't think it was a good matchup before, but I think there is a psychology of, you know what, we played with these guys toe-to-toe, and we're going to beat them. It's our gym. Let's not kid ourselves. Every player, every person in that arena knows the weight of this game, and I think we're going to be flying high. I think it means a heck of a lot more to us than Michigan. It's a good trap game. They're coming off that big win over Ohio State this weekend, and I don't care. You can tell me they blew in the face, even if we had them tied. I still believe every team comes into Welsh Run not giving us enough credit and not taking it seriously. Just like we think about going to Penn State or Iowa, even though they've been terrible, you mentally as fans, you think that's a win. I think there's no that with players. I think Michigan coming in here, I don't know. I'm hoping we're focused, but I like to think we're going to be more focused on tomorrow's game than any game we've had this season.
Yeah. It's tough to base anything on this game based on the last game, just because, I mean, Northwestern's almost a completely different team now. It's, you know, they've gotten rid of the center and the starting lineup and really given a lot of teams matchup problems just by putting Sherner at the five and forcing the center to, you know, try and keep put them on the perimeter, step out and contest the three pointers. But I agree, it's just like the first game, it comes down to rebounding and, you know, even though Northwestern got killed on the glass against Missouri, they did a good job in testing those putbacks and keeping them away, that they were able to survive despite it. It's hard to predict what this team is going to do night in and night out. They're obviously very, very good. And so, you know, it depends on the intensity, and I think it does depend on who makes shots down the stretch. We saw against Indiana and you know, the team just kind of go cold, and I don't think that can happen in this game. They survived it at Michigan, you know, a month ago, or a little bit more than a month ago. I don't know if they can survive it this time, because, you know, while you guys are kind of saying this is a trap game, I kind of think Michigan might be coming in feeling like world beaters. They beat Ohio, not Ohio State. They beat their big rival and scored a big win, but, you know, it's guaranteeing them a pretty high seed tournament. You know, I heard someone say that, I read somewhere that they think that Michigan will get no lower than a five. I mean, this is a very good team that's coming into Evanston tomorrow, and no one should be taking this lightly, and I think it really will come down to just pure execution at the end.
Okay, guys, you know, the fact that we're talking about this here 2 weeks from not even 2 weeks from March, it's pretty exciting. And, you know, it leads to kind of a wrap-up conversation. We talked about this a bit, but the idea of if Northwestern does make the tournament, you know, what it would mean, what it would feel like. I have some thoughts, but wanted to see what you guys thought first, Jay.
I think it's immeasurable, you know, from someone like myself, who is a fan of 20 plus years, is one thing, you know, but really, if you look at that inner circle of the program, from the Kevin Rankins to the, you know, Tim Doyles to the Billy McKinney's to the Rich Falks, I can't even put my arms around what that would feel like for them. Everywhere they went, and they tell people that they played basketball at Northwestern, and they, you know, all the Snickers they've had to deal with over the years about not making the tournament, it just would be an incredible cathartic experience, I've got to imagine. But from a bigger picture, I really think, boy, would this supercharge things. We've got the new facilities plan, which we don't know what's in it, but we know there's going to be some major upgrades for basketball. You know, Bob Knight and many people have told people that you just can't win at Northwestern. And, you know, I think, and within the coaches, if you talk to coaches off the record, they'll tell you, you know, yeah, it's a coaching graveyard. So at some point, there'll be a coach after Bill Carmody, and we haven't addressed that white elephant, and it's probably not appropriate to go into it now. But I think you get through that can't be done factor like we did in football, and all of a sudden you start building a program that has expectations of going every year, and it's going to have a path to have the facilities to show that it's going to compete at the top level. It's a game changer. I mean, I don't even think we could calculate or even embellish the potential impact that making the tournament would have on this program.
Yeah, I think I have to echo what Jay said. I mean, you can't I don't think you can put it into words right now, because you don't know. I mean, it's something that has never been done at Northwestern. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. It would raise the expectations for Northwestern and what you can do at Northwestern. It'll show that it'll get a monkey off their back, which I think will help enable that consistency. I mean, just not having to answer that question anymore is going to free up everything for future generations of Northwestern Wildcats. And like Jay said, it'll prove that you can win at Northwestern, that it is possible to have it both ways, you know, have a successful team that can get into the tournament and, you know, a team that, you know, supposedly, you know, lives up to the high academic standards of the school that they're with. And, you know, it'd be an incredible accomplishment for the program, for the school, but most of all for the players. I mean, I just can't imagine how excited that they would be to have this opportunity and to say that I'm the first to have this opportunity for Northwestern.
And essentially, you know, as I think about it, you know, try to think about it through the prism of, you know, someone who was there when the football team went to the Rose Bowl, and the comparisons to that, and, you know, I mean, the one, you know, difference there is, for particularly back then, 95, going to the, you know, Rose Bowl was the, you know, pinnacle of success for a Big Ten team, whereas, you know, making the tournament is kind of a, you know, sort of a base level success. But then when you put the history behind it, I mean, the fact that they have this, only major conference school never to make the tournament would be a huge, huge step, and not just, I think, for the fan base and such, and for that, you know, the inner circle that LTP was talking about, but in the context of this athletic master plan that LTP mentioned. I mean, I think back to that Rose Bowl team, and I remember getting called to a major announcement affecting the future of Northwestern athletics. I distinctly remember that. And it was after the football team had beaten, I believe it was after the football team had beaten Notre Dame. It was definitely early in that 95 season. And the announcement was, and no one knew what it was going to be. And the announcement turned out it was announcing the renovations of what was then Dyke Stadium, this major fundraising campaign and such. Renovation of Dyke Stadium and some other facilities as well. And if memory serves me correctly, you know, obviously they go on that Rose Bowl run, and that sphere of success accelerated the fundraising for that. And if I remember correctly, they actually then wound up finishing the renovations a year early as a result. So there's that aspect that if they can take the success and take it to the, you know, and go to the tournament, what that would mean for fundraising towards this athletic master plan, I think could be really impressive. And either way, I think they're going to do a great job raising the money, but I think going to the tournament, what that would mean might help accelerate that a bit, which would obviously be, you know, fantastic for the entire athletic department. So, I guess kind of before we wrap up, guys, any closing comments? Is it, like we said, is the fact that we're this geeked about Northwestern hoops at this point is pretty awesome in and of itself.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead, Philip. You said it well, Brad.
Well, I was going to say we're not talking lacrosse right now, and as good as the lacrosse team is, it's you know, it's still a little too cold to be outside, you know, cheering on the ladies.
I think. I try to capture this in the written word, which I do because it's better than me speaking. But I think the alternative, you know, as a Northwestern basketball fan, you're just predisposed for disappointment. And, you know, there's times this year where the pain got too great and I was like, I need to shut it down. I just can't emotionally go there. And then just when you're giving up, they pull you back in. And the emotional roller coaster, whatever it's going to be, you know, we lose tomorrow, I'm going to be crestfallen and then pick myself up for the next game. But it's so much better than the alternative. You know, people like the old adage, oh, I'd rather we not even be close to making it than be close and not make it. You know, it's fun. I mean, it makes these winter months so much more tolerable and exciting when you have something like this to look forward to. I mean, I haven't written a football post in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I mean, spring practice begins March 3rd, the very last day of our
regular season, and it's like before we know it, we're going to wake up and spring ball's here. And so it's just so fun to see how the other half lives. And I'd love nothing more than Schoen and those guys to make it.
What's that, Philip?
And even then on March 3rd, you know, we won't be talking football much either. It's looking like.
Well, gentlemen, yeah. Here let's make a deal.
Sorry.
So if Northwestern makes the tournament and they go into the West Regional and they wind up out in Phoenix at Sweet 16, party at my house.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll take it. I'll take it. Well, gentlemen, I think that was fun there. Our first LTP, first Lakes Post podcast, but we hope will be many. And go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.